Hey, hello. Oh, there's a video. Hi, I'm Cameron. I'm an alcoholic. That's going to be weird. Yeah, my sobriety date is November 28th of 2008. And I got a home group. It's Common Peril in St. Pete. You guys should check it out Mondays and Fridays, 6:30 and 7:30. And it's awesome. Yeah, and I sponsor guys, and I'm always willing to sponsor others, and I got a sponsor, and we practice the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, but yeah, I'll just get right down to it. Let's see, I started drinking when I was about 12 or 13 years old. I was hanging out with some friends. I was hanging out with a buddy of mine was had very rich parents. They were doctors, and we had the house to ourselves, and he was like, "You guys want to drink?" And I was like, "Yeah, dude, I love to drink, you know." And I'd never drank in my entire life, but I wanted to look cool, you know, and I was not cool. And can you guys hear me okay? And I remember I still remember it to this day. His parents had this liquor cabinet, and it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. It was rosewood, and it was glass, and it was so full. And it had mirrors in the back and the sides that just kind of looked like the booze went on forever. It was really amazing. And, you know, and I remember pulling this bottle of vodka out of there, and just because I knew I'd seen that before, you know, and I took the top off of that, and I took a big old pull off it, man, and you know, something magical happened, you know. Up until that point, I was just this really weird kid. I had this kind of bowl cut mullet hair that my mom cut for me all the time, you know, and I wore these shirts with, like, Indians with spears and wolves howling at moons, you know, and I had camouflage cargo shorts on with cowboy boots, and, you know, I was just a weird kid, you know, and angry, always felt uncomfortable, I didn't even like the friends I was hanging out with, you know, I was just that kind of guy. I didn't like anybody or anything, and I felt out of place all the time, and something happened, man. I remember this tingly feeling hit my feet and came all the way up my body, and I thought I was going to throw up, but I had, you know, too much pride to puke in front of my buddies because I was a seasoned veteran of this drinking thing, you know, so I choked it down, and something magical happened when that went away. I fell in love. I mean, I really did. I hear that a lot, you know. People talk about they love shoes or they love sports, they love this, they love that, and like, no, I fell in love, man. I knew what I wanted to do with my life at that moment. I was like, this is it. This is amazing, you know, and my buddies, they didn't even really like it all that much. I had one friend who tried a couple sips, another got a little buzz going, and they all left the room and just left me alone in there, and I just drank, and I started drinking that whole bottle, and I went around just making a mess in all these rooms and all types of ways, you know, until I got asked to leave, you know, which is kind of pretty much how my drinking went all the time, you know, from that moment forward. And I remember just filling this bottle of water up with vodka and filling this bottle of vodka up with water and putting it back and went out on the town, man. I'm falling into traffic, almost getting ran over by cars, you know, my buddy's dragging me, you know what I mean? I threw up on a cop's leg. He's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Whoa," you know, ran away from that and eventually just blacked out, and I came to in this portable toilet just laying on the floor, you know, just like felt like I got hit by a truck, but at the same time, like, I never had so much fun in my entire life, you know, and I wanted to do that again, and that was it, man. I didn't care about sports or college or jobs or anything, man. I just wanted to party, you know, just endless summer, and that's what I did, you know. I went on through most of my youth doing that, you know, running into Albertsons and stealing bottles of MD-2020 and stuffing them in backpacks, you know, getting quarts of, you know, Old English and putting them in our pockets, going to keg parties I'm not invited to, you know, stealing cups, you know, telling people the cops are out front so they'll go and hide while we drag the keg away, you know. I mean, I would take whole trays of Jello shots and just eat them alone in the bushes and just stumble out with like green rings on my mouth, you know, people ask me to leave, you know. That's like a huge running theme with my whole drinking, you know, and you know, I had a blast, man. I really did. My drinking was not really a problem for me as much as it was for everyone else, you know. I was just having a really good time, you know, and then I turned like 18, and it seemed like everything started to change. I don't know if I was a little slower or a little more drunk, but I just seemed to get arrested all the time. Like, I couldn't turn the corner without a fucking cop showing up, you know, and my mom got really tired of it. I'd have been tired of me a long time ago. The patience this woman has is incredible, and I'll never forget it, man. I was in the middle of doing laundry, you know, and I remember she came into the garage to confront me, and she said, "Cameron, we need to talk." And I'm like, "Well, what's this about?" She's like, "Listen, you can stay, but you have to stop drinking." And I was like, "You're throwing me out?" And she's like, no, you can stay, but you have to stop drinking. I'm like, I can't believe you're doing this to me, Mom. And she's like, no, you can stay. And I'm like, oh, I hate you, you know what I mean? I threw the fit of like a 12-year-old, you know what I mean? Or you know, and I was just like, I can't believe you're doing this to me. And she's like, no, you can stay, listen. And I'm like, ah, you know, and I packed up this trash bag full of wet clothes and just went out down 4th Street in St. Pete, just summertime, hot sun, getting cooked, you know, and I ended up finding this bridge in this residential neighborhood. It was sweet, you know. I talk about it all the time. This bridge was amazing. I went down there, and I thought to myself, this is waterfront property. People work their entire lives, and I've just come across it, did nothing for it, and it's all mine, you know? And it was gorgeous, man. The sun rose on one side, set on the other. It was mist in the mornings. Ducks would come by. It was nice and cool. And then when you go to sleep at night, the cars would go over. It sounded like just a beating heart. It's like you're in the womb. It was just an amazing place. And I really liked it. I love the big book talks about how, you know, the alcoholic life is the only normal one, and that's really how it was. I never thought anything of it. I thought everybody got into fights. I thought nobody worked jobs, you know what I mean? And I thought people just partied all the time, you know? I used to sit there on, like, bus stops, and I would drink. I'd always have, like, some, like, 2-liter bottle of soda, like, filled with, like, mixtures of things I've gotten a hold of, you know? And I would just watch these people, like, cutting each other off and running red lights and pumping gas. And just, like, I just thought, like, what a bunch of suckers, man. Like, what, are you going to go to work? You know? Like, that's fucking nuts, you know? And I just didn't get it, you know? And it was a lot of fun. But unfortunately, with all those arrests and not having a mailing address, being homeless on probation is, like, the worst, you know? Because you have a lot of failure to appear. And probation really wants you to do a lot of things you're just not capable of doing when you're living on the streets, to be honest, you know. You're not paying fines or passing drug tests or getting a job or any of those. And so I ended up going to jail a lot, you know, as a result. And I remember it was almost like everything was on fast forward and all of a sudden somebody hit pause. And I was at a podium just like this. And I remember these big giant cops were coming up behind me, you know, and they started grabbing me. And I'm like, whoa, what is happening, you know? And they were like, this judge is talking about giving me 5 years in prison. And I'm like, holy shit, you know, like 5 years. Because I can do county time. I love county time, to be honest. I thrive in controlled environments. You know what I mean? I love to draw. I love to work out, eat peanut butter, Nutter Butters, hanging out, writing letters to ex-girlfriends about how I'm going to do better this time. And it's going to be awesome when I get out of here, you know, and calling my mom, you know. And eventually, they're going to let me out. And I know that, you know. But prison, I was not built for prison. I'm definitely not built for it now, and I sure as hell wasn't built for it then, you know. And so I was terrified, you know. And she was like, either you're doing 5 years in prison or you're going to go to this 6-month inpatient treatment center. And I was like, shit, you know. I'm not the brightest crayon in the box by any means, but I can do that math, you know. And I was like, let's go to treatment, you know. And so I went to this inpatient treatment center for 6 months with a bunch of drug addicts and alcoholics who have never been to an AA meeting or a treatment. And it was nuts, man. That place was so crazy. People are tearing how it works, fighting over who gets to read it. It was bizarre. Everybody's like calling each other out, like build up the towel on the floor, like the middle of the meeting has nothing to do with anything. You know what I mean? It was like how any of us made it out of there is beyond me, you know. And I remember getting out of there, they called me a pillar of sobriety. I was like eating mushrooms like in this place, you know what I mean? Shroom chocolates, you know, tripping balls, you know, and just really, you know, really breaking all the rules, honestly. But anyways, you know, I got out of there, you know, and the one thing that place did do, though, it introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember going to these meetings and these people would come up and they're like, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I'm like, what? And he's like, how bad you want to be sober? What are you willing to do? And I'm like, whoa, let's take it easy, dude. You're going to call me every day. I'm like, listen, man, I get one call a week, one quarter to make that call. It is not going to this guy. You know what I mean? But I'll tell him I will, but we're never going to see this guy again, you know? And I thought Alcoholics Anonymous is extremely creepy. I did not want anything to do with this place, you know? And it's funny how, you know, alcohol is a great persuader because, you know, I got out of there and just, you know, I started drinking on just Fridays and Fridays into Saturdays, Saturdays into Sundays. Before I knew it, I was drinking, you know, around the clock again. And life got really crazy and really weird all over again, as if I'd never had like almost a year of sobriety between jail and this place, you know, and it was all back to the beginning, you know. And it got wild, man. It got weird. I started tattooing people and living rooms and you know, doing like extra fingers on prayer hands, misspelling people's names, you know, slipping and sliding, just wrecking people's bodies, you know what I mean? It's like 4 a.m., I got a quart of beer between my legs, it's super dark in this room, you know, I'm falling asleep, you know, and it's just like, it was nuts, man. It was a wild time, you know, and, you know, I started, you know, I didn't want to work, man. I'm not a worker. I hate working. Like, I remember trying to work at Burger King for like 4 hours, and I asked if I could smoke a cigarette, and I literally ran away. I jumped a fence to get away just because I was so afraid somebody was going to see me, you know, leaving, because I didn't want to do it, man. It was too much. This lunch rush was terrifying. You know what I mean? Life without alcohol is too much to bear, honestly. And I still went in there to get that $12.75 later on, you know, to get that check, right? And I had to bring my shirts back. Most of that day was watching training videos, swear to God. They put me on that line for 10 minutes. I had to get out of there. Yeah, man, I was just talking about this the other day. I remember this kid let me stay in his house, this poor kid. And he let me sleep on his couch, and he would go to work, and I would drag in debris and furniture from the alleyway, and I built this divider wall in his living room, and I just took over, you know, and he didn't mind at first. He liked having me around, you know. I seemed to make him laugh a bit, but it got crazy, and I remember one night I was smoking cigarettes, and I'm walking around, and I'm trying to think of a way to make money, you know, and I see this reward sign for this dog, and I'm like, shit, man, if I could find that dog, I could get that $500, you know, and I'm like looking around, that dog ain't anywhere to be seen. But I saw this cat, and I was like, shit, man, maybe somebody wants that cat. And so I got that cat, and I brought it back to this kid's house. And I thought, you know, if this works with one cat, what about a bunch of cats? And before I had a house full of cats just waiting on the day I saw this reward sign, and they're eating pizza. We don't need to get into the living conditions of how these cats were, but it was crazy. This house was getting nuts, you know what I mean? The kitchen was the bathroom for them, you know? It was a wild scene, and I told them, everybody, that one of the kids that lived in the house keeps pooping on the kitchen floor, and we can't get him to stop. And, you know, one day the landlord gets super pissed, you know, and he wants us out of there, obviously. And he whips open this door to yell at us, and this tidal wave of cats comes flying at him. And he's screaming, he's like, what the fuck? And fur's flying, and they're climbing up his body, and he's getting scratched on his face, and he's cussing, and he's yelling, I want you out of here. And so that night, I loaded all my stuff up into a shopping cart, and I just took off, you know, off into the night again, and just always moving, right? And eventually, I ended up back in jail, and I started reading the big book. And I remember getting in there and seeing, like, you know, total abstinence, spiritual experience. And I was like, this isn't going to be good. This isn't going to work, you know. But you know, I continued to drink until I got into a really dark place, you know, and I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wanted nothing more than to be sober, you know. And my road to a happy destiny was rocking rough, man. I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, constantly. I wiped my home group out of White Chips. They called me and asked me to bring them back in, you know. And people would just mumble shit. They stopped clapping. They're like, what are you doing? Your tile on your floor? You starting a poker game? You know, and I'd be like, Jesus, I get resentful. I'll go get drunk again, you know. It was just like all the time. I'd be drunk making coffee, you know, just because I didn't know what else to do, you know. I just felt really, I felt like Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work for me, and I felt like drinking didn't work for me, and I wanted to kill myself. You know, I was drinking to die. We were well past, there was a point when I was 13, and I was puking on my buddies, and we're laughing and running around, and we're alcoholics. And now I'm just this sad guy, an adult male, you know, throwing up on myself in an alleyway all alone, mumbling to no one, I'm an alcoholic, you know, and it is sad. Thank you. No, you know, and that's how it was, man. I started drinking to die. I wanted it to be over. You know, I was just talking about this the other night. I remember climbing up on there's an overpass over where I live by Lelman. Goes over the interstate off 54th Avenue. And I climbed up on it because I just wanted to jump, you know. And I got up there and I'm so afraid of heights. So I immediately climbed down because I was like, I'm probably not going to die. They're going to take my clothes. They're going to take my laces. And I'm not going to be able to drink. And they're going to put me in some psych ward, you know. And plus, I was just terrified. And I remember going down to the end of the road and finding the bar and trying to look for somebody to kill me, you know, which no one did. They just kicked my ass, which is very embarrassing and painful, you know, and I did not die, you know. Just more shame to live with, and, you know, and I just didn't want to go on anymore. And I remember, you know, I remember calling this kid up, and it's funny, like, I had totally given up on Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no faith in it. I had done, like, all these, like, ficky paws, and people are throwing footballs, and I'm so afraid they're going to, like, throw it at me, you know what I mean? I can't look anybody in the eye. I'm terrified. Run out of that, get drunk. I mean, I did all these things. I'm selling raffle tickets. I'm making coffee, you know. I just don't know what to do. You know, I'm hitting meetings. The only people that will talk to me are people in AA because they have to, you know, and so I just didn't know. I thought I was doing it all, right? And, you know, I say it all the time. Just because you listen to music doesn't mean you can dance. Just because you watch Karate Kid doesn't mean you can fight. And just because you go to AA doesn't mean you're going to get sober, you know. And that's the truth, you know. And luckily I was drunk enough to call this guy. And I asked him to take me to a meeting. And since I was that guy, you know, he said, I can't do it, but I know somebody maybe who can. And I said, oh, okay, whatever, you know. So he sent somebody to pick me up. And, you know, I polished off this beer right in my mother's front yard and chucked it in the grass like an asshole. And I got in the car and I drove to this meeting. And a good friend of mine who ended up later on being my sponsor was celebrating. And he was celebrating 5 years. And he drank like I did and he lived like me and he was celebrating. And I remember, as drunk as I was, it gave me hope, you know. I was like, holy shit, this guy's got something, you know. And this meeting was a lot different than the meetings I had been to. I used to go to these meetings and I'd hear crazy shit about, I don't go fishing anymore because if I do, I'll drink. And I don't even play guitar anymore because if I do that, I'll drink. And I would do this and I would just take my ass into a bag and I fell ball, you know. And I was like, oh, these guys with time sound more afraid than I do, you know. I was like, I don't want to live like that, you know. And these people in this room had something, you know. And I remember they offered a white chip and I got up and I shuffled over, you know, and they were out. And I was like, of course you are, you know. And then this kid gave me his and he got to talking to me outside the meeting, you know, and I had seen him around. He just, you know, on paper, this kid is probably not a great idea for a sponsor. He was just out of rehab. He had 6 months sober, right? But he was speaking my language and he had a solution, you know, and he told me, he was the first person to ever really say this in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, you know, people who drink like you usually don't make it. And I was like, shit, man, you are not making me feel any better, bro. And he's like, well, I don't know what to tell you. I'm like, then what are we doing here? And he's like, the only time I've ever seen anybody make it is when they go through the steps. And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. And we got into it, man. I was shaking like a leaf, smoking cigarettes in the front seat of his car, and we got into 1, 2, and 3, you know. And he broke down to me what an alcoholic was and what the phenomenon of craving was, and he kind of really explained a lot of things that I really didn't understand, despite being an Alcoholics Anonymous for years, you know. And he got into the middle obsession, you know, and what that really was and the insanity of alcoholism, you know. And because I really, for the life of me, you know, I didn't want to be doing these things, and I kept doing them. You know what I mean? My mom's in the hospital going into surgery, and I can't stay. You know what I mean? I have court in the morning, and I can't hold it together for a few hours to go there sober. You know what I mean? Jobs, girlfriends, whatever it is, I can't hang, you know? And so it just blew my mind. I felt insane, you know, and that's exactly what it was. And he kind of broke down to me, you know, like, you know, that's what this whole thing's all about, you know, and it's going to take that away. And I was like, shit, okay, you know. And then we went over the third step. And, you know, I've been doing 1, 2, and 3 in the parking lot of every meeting across Pinellas County. I knew that prayer by heart, not on purpose, you know. While holding hands with guys, while people walk by and I'm mumbling this thing, you know, no idea what I'm doing. And he really broke it down. He was like, you know, he's like, you're going to make this deal with this power greater than yourself that it's going to help you out as long as you're willing to help out others. And I was like, well, I could do that, you know. And I got fired up, man. It wasn't the weird tingly feelings. I had that before. I mean, there was a lot of times where I was like, everything's going to be different now. I turn my will and my life over, you know, and I was like drunk like that night, you know. This was different. This was special. You know, I felt like I had a purpose for the first time in my life, you know, and I went home and I started writing, you know, I'm sitting there and I had the gift of unemployment at my mom's, angry, cigarettes, you know, half drunk, shaking, you know, walking around, writing down this list of everything and everybody I've ever had a problem with in my life, you know, and I loved it, you know, because I came out of the womb just pissed off, you know what I mean? I had this thing was a blast, man. I had things down there from elementary school, kids that made fun of my hair, you know, girlfriends from the third grade that I was like afraid they were going to leave me for like Jonathan Taylor Thomas and NSYNC and Leonardo DiCaprio because their posters were all over her walls. You know, and I was so sure that they were going to come and, like, take this third grader away from me, you know. And I would think at night about killing them if I ever saw them, what I'd do, you know. And what's even crazier is, like, being, like, an adult and writing these guys down. You know what I mean? Because nobody knows where they are. VH1 doesn't know where they are. No one cares. I care, you know, and I'm going to kill them. And so I'm like, that's pretty nuts. But I'm writing it down, you know, and it went on and on like that, you know. And I love those first three columns, who and what I'm angry at, you know, why, and what does it affect to my life? Like, I've been telling that to anybody who'll listen to me, you know. And I got to this fourth column, where am I at fault? Indeed, up until this point, I was just this hero in this tragic comedy that somehow just made it through all these trials and tribulations and persevered with a story to tell, you know. And I had never once in my life thought that I had done anything, you know, and I got to writing, and it blew my mind. I mean, and it's really kind of silly, right? I had, like, cops on there, stole my freedom, you know what I mean, ruined my life. You know, dude, if you didn't arrest me for the things I was doing, like, you should be fired. Like, to turn a blind eye to that and just be like, well, you know, boys will be boys, you know. It's like, dude, no, that's nuts. I'm a danger to, like, myself and everybody else, you know. And, you know, and it went on and on like that. You know, I was like, all these girls who broke my heart, I would, like, tell them that I'm going to go to the bathroom and, like, leave out their back door and just disappear for, like, months and then, like, come back, try to come back in, like, hey, what's going on, you know? But, man, when they wouldn't talk to me, it's like I'm just drinking and crying to everybody. She broke my heart. She's such a bitch, you know. And it's just, yeah, man, everybody's, like, buying into it, you know. Probably, maybe. I thought they were, you know, And it went on and on like that. You know, I had a part in everything. You know what I mean? I was just a tornado, just destroying people's lives. Like, and there was so much just, like, fancy nonsense that, like, these people don't even know I exist. And they're, like, ruling my mind for my entire life, you know. And it just blew me away, like, how angry and how controlling this all was, you know. And same thing with fear, man. I remember doing that fears inventory and it didn't even make sense. I was afraid of having a girlfriend, not having a girlfriend, afraid of living, afraid of dying, afraid of being sober, afraid of being not sober. It was so contradicting, you know, and I was just terrified of absolutely everything, you know. I had always just thought I was this badass because I made these horribly reckless decisions, you know, but the fact is, man, I was afraid the entire time. I had my ass kicked by large groups of people just because I'm afraid of strangers who I'll never see again and can't even tell you what they look like now, thinking I'm a punk, you know. Like, that's nuts. That's so crazy, you know. I used to sit there and I would circle businesses with fake phone numbers and fake addresses with fake bosses' names because I was so afraid to go, like, actually talk to, like, an employer and, like, do an interview or, like, get a job that I would just pretend to my mom that these things were, I had pots cooking, you know what I mean? We got plans. We got job interviews coming. Don't worry, mom, it's going to be cool, you know? And, you know, I was just so afraid of everything. Fear ruled my life, you know? And I really started to realize, like, not only how controlling, but just how much of life I really missed out on because I was so afraid, you know. And same thing with the sex inventory. I started putting all that down on paper and just saw how, like, dishonest and selfish I had been, you know. And I remember having this thing and just realizing what a piece of shit I was for the first time in my life, you know. And I didn't want to be that guy anymore. And I remember just calling my sponsor and being like, dude, what are we going to do now? And he's like, we're going to do a fist step. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but okay, you know. And I remember he got me packs of cigarettes. He was like, what kind of cigarettes do you smoke? I'm like, 305s. He's like, no, seriously, what kind of cigarettes do you smoke? Like, I was like, oh, Marlboro's. And he's like, oh, okay, all right, cool. I'm like, nice, dude. He got, like, Red Bulls and coffees and waters and cigarettes, and we went into this garage, and I remember he was like, it was like this weird little dirty garage with a bare bulb and these two little shitty armchairs facing each other. He's like, I'm going to go pray. You can pray if you want to. I'm like, what? And then he crawled into this little cubbyhole in the corner, and I'm like, where the fuck did he just go, you know? And I'm like, okay. And I sat down in this armchair holding my little book, and I pretended to pray because I had no idea what to pray about. And he came back, and we got into it, and we started going over this thing. And it blew my mind, man. We were in there for so long. We were chain smoking cigarettes. There's a garage apartment. This dude above us is like coughing and puking because of the cigarette smoke coming up between, up his floor. You know, we could hear him. We're like, geez, I hope he's okay. You know, and this is my buddy Shane. Rest in peace. He didn't die from that. He died from something else. Actually, that saved his life. He went to the hospital that night and they found all these health problems. Anyways, that's God working in two ways there, you know, two birds, one stone. And, you know, we went over this thing, and I dumped it all out, man. I had these things, and I wouldn't want to talk about it. And he would share something similar, and I'd flip back and be like, actually, I got that on here too, you know. And oh, shit, okay, fuck. All right, I'll wrap it up. And, oh, yeah, that's kind of, okay, you know, that's, okay. But, you know, something happened to me while I was in that garage. I left a free man that day, you know. I had gone in there just this little shell, just ready to die. Didn't care what happened next, you know, and I left a free man. You know, I had the feeling that something was going to be all right, you know, and I remember going back to my mom's house and doing 6 and 7 and reviewing all this stuff and just seeing all these resentments I had and all this anger I had and how petty it was and how, like, all these people I was mad at were sick too, just as sick as I was, you know what I mean, and, like, how bad I treated everybody and how bad I'd been living life and how afraid I was, and I didn't want to be that guy anymore. You know, and I wanted more than anything to not be. And I remember just doing that prayer, you know, 100 different ways because I was so afraid of, like, messing it up, you know. And I remember just sitting there and feeling for the first time in my life I was going to be all right. And it blew my mind because I didn't even have a week sober yet, you know. And I remember telling people and they laughed at me, you know what I mean? They were like, oh, yeah, that's what everybody says. You're on a pink cloud, you know. And, like, it's like I've been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for years and never felt nothing like this. And all of a sudden, like, within a few days of taking the steps, everything's changing, you know, and I was fired up, man. I started doing 10, 11, and 12 and trying to sponsor anybody I could, you know. I like truly fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I got this piece of shit car out of this old lady's alleyway. She's like, for $200, you could have it, you know. And it was like bashed in the side. The wheel didn't turn, you know what I mean? We put a come along and pulled the quarter panel out against the telephone pole, and this thing wobbled, and it had no wipers, and I'd have it packed full of new guys. We didn't know people's names. We gave them all nicknames. We'd spend all night driving around to shitty neighborhoods, dropping them off at halfway houses, you know. It was awesome. It was the most fun I've ever had. You know, we would laugh and yell and argue, and guys would get out and walk next to the car, and you'd be like, just get back inside, man. He didn't mean it, bro. Just come on, let's go. You know, and we'd hit meetings all the time, and, you know, in between just drinking coffee and just talking shit about anybody who walked by and just talking about AA in between, you know, and really breaking down, like, what the book meant, you know. And and I loved it, man. It's to this day, you know, it's really funny. You know, I had coming in, I had nothing. I had this little shitty pizza job where I held this sign on the corner and people threw things at me, faggot, throw fucking bottles of soda. I'm like, Jesus Christ, fucking assholes, you know, minimum wage, getting cooked, right? 8 hours a day in the sun, Florida, you know, and all to get in this car and drive around doing AA the rest of my time, you know, and to my little shitty apartment, you know. And chain smoking cigarettes, and honestly, it was the most fun I've ever had. It was a real adventure. I met so many people and saw so many miracles and saw, you know, so many amazing things, you know. And I don't know, it's been wild, man. And you know, it's not always great. I think we miss that a lot of times. People with time, we tend to like talk about what it was like, how it got better, and then we wrap it up, you know. But it's not like that. And dude, deep into sobriety, I've had all types of hard times. I lived in a tent in my mother's backyard at 5 years sober, which I actually really enjoyed. Nobody else did, but you know what I mean? I had a blast, you know? I mean, it's been ups and downs. It's gotten dark, you know, where I've just been like, you know, doing speaking events, talking to new people about myself, you know, and wondering why I feel so crazy and finding myself just in my kitchen, in my underwear, you know, chain smoking cigarettes. You know, I got Hank Williams playing really low, and I'm staring at a blank wall thinking about killing myself. And it's like, hey, you probably shouldn't be doing this at, you know, 10 years sober or more, you know. And it's like, you know, and then I get that notebook out, and I start writing, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm entirely consumed by self right now. You know, it's like, I found that I have to keep up on these things. It's a constant state of, like, growing this relationship with the power greater than myself, inventorying what I'm doing wrong, and trying to be helpful to others. Because when those things fall off, like, I can't just do one or just do two, you know what I mean? Because I'll sit there and talk to a homeless person who has no job and would love to have a job about how much I hate my job and how much of a pain in the ass it is to have to pay bills and shit, you know, and how the house never really seems to be clean, you know, how hard I work at it, you know, and this guy would just love to, like, take a shower, and that's the problem. Like, when I'm full of self, I'm entirely cut off from the world and I'm not able to be of service to others. You know, so I really need to keep up on that all the time, you know, and I don't know, aside from that, man, it's a trip, you know. I think about it all the time. Whenever I sit there and I listen to people talk about how great their lives are, I used to get so angry, and I'm like, this motherfucker and his big-ass house and his beautiful wife, nobody cares, bro, just sit down, that's your story. But the fact is, I actually don't have those things, but, you know, and I still get angry when people do it, you know what I mean, but I will say this, that, like, my life has gotten so much better after getting sober that I could not even imagine how it would be, you know, from being just this kid who's drunk, drinking with homeless people, you know what I mean, to, like, living the life I have now is nuts, dude. Thank you. You know, it really is. It's just like, I don't know, man. My world was so small. I wasn't allowed to leave the county for so long. I was on probation in two counties. I wasn't allowed to do anything. I couldn't work at fast food jobs, you know what I mean? And now I'm like traveling the world, you know, doing all types of crazy shit. I learned to snowboard the other day. It was just fucking amazing. And it's all I want to do now. It's all I want to do. And I'm obsessed with it. And I'm in Florida and it sucks. But you know what I mean? I mean, I've made amazing friends and developed amazing relationships. I've seen guys get carted out of meetings on stretchers because they're so drunk that they fall out before they get done reading how it works, you know, and get sober. Take the steps, rebuild lives, start sponsoring guys, get their family back. So I've seen a guy who literally got sent home to die because he couldn't get detoxed by alcohol. He was getting, they were doing beer runs for him. Dude, if he cut himself shaving, he would bleed to death. Dude's getting sent home to die. My buddy rides up there, takes him through the steps. Full recovery, makes his own meetings. I mean, just crazy shit you can't even explain, you know? And I've seen a lot of really sad, bad stuff, too. Alcoholics Anonymous is a very beautiful and a very depressing place at times, you know? But, yeah, I mean, man, I wouldn't trade it for the world. And I appreciate you guys listening to me tonight. Thank you.